and welcome to Popcorn Psychology, the podcast where we watch blockbuster movies and psychoanalyze them. We are all licensed clinical professional counselors, also known as therapists, who practice out of Chicago. Even though we are licensed mental health professionals, this podcast is purely for entertainment purposes and to fulfill our love of dissecting pop culture in all forms. My name is Brittany Brownfield, and I am a child therapist.
My name is Hannah Espinoza-Rimes, and I am a marriage and family therapist.
My name is Ben Stover, and I am an individual therapist.
And today, for our first episode, we're going to be talking about Star Wars The Last Jedi, which I'm pretty sure everyone's familiar with what that is. It's the second movie in this current trilogy of Star Wars movies. And more specifically, we're going to talk about the topics of trauma and abusive relationships that we saw in the movie with the characters of Luke, Kylo Ren, and Rey. So we're going to talk about trauma first.
So one of the things that sparked our interest in even doing this project was conversations we were having. We noticed that there was a lot of controversy around this movie and a lot of the issues people had with the portrayal, primarily of Luke Skywalker, who had been traditionally the hero, who had always been the Optimus, had had a ton of archetypal hero's journey, optimistic, hopeful qualities to him. And in this movie, they turned a lot of that on its head, and a lot of people had a big problem with that. But for me, as a therapist, seeing the way that Luke was portrayed, I actually felt resonated pretty strongly with me, because they were showing clear depictions of what a traumatized person would act like. They portrayed Luke as a human being, not as an archetype, and I thought that that was something that, you know, from my knowledge base, I could share a little bit on, and it might help people understand a little bit more why Rian Johnson made the choices that he did that so many people were against, because I thought it was actually beautifully done.
I really loved it as well, for the same reasons. It had a lot of emotional depth and realism in it that I don't think you see a lot in fantastical movies, period, much less like a sci-fi opera like Star Wars is. And with Luke, and that's what we had talked about too, like how, I mean, one clear sign of a traumatized person is if they shut down. And by that we mean someone, well, it kind of sounds like exactly what it is. Like you kind of shut off from people, you isolate yourself. And I don't think you can get any more shut down than I'm going to go to an island till I die by myself.
Yeah. And also the idea that sometimes people who experience trauma find different ways to kind of punish themselves, and it seemed to me like that's part of what Luke was doing also when he was leaving, is that he was punishing himself for what he almost did to his nephew, and that running away and hiding was part of him having a trauma reaction to the scenario that he was placed in when that went down with Kylo Ren.
Well, I mean, he had the 1-2 punch of trauma, which is something really bad happens to you, like all the students getting killed, you know, his nephew turning and running away, and then being the person that also caused that trauma. And so you're having the guilt of it on top of having the visceral reaction to it and the all that trauma feelings inside of you.
Yeah.
Right. So when we watched, you know, this movie, we realized that in watching it, Luke meets many of the criteria listed out in the DSM-5 for trauma. It's pretty clear. I mean, like, he's got exposure to actual or threatened death. He's got exposure to both. Like,
multiple times in multiple times. Movies.
Yeah. Right. Loss of a limb in
True.
Empire Strikes Back. He's witnessed multiple deaths. He's got, clearly has recurrent dreams of this, or he thoughts of it. He avoids it. His clear avoidance. Right, he's got negative alterations in his mood.
Yeah, he's all over the place, kind of. Really testy and irritable.
Right, and depressed. He's got survivor's guilt.
For sure. Very, I don't know if it's not necessarily DSM, but that of kind of pushing people away too. Ascribing himself as, like, a bad person. You know, I can't teach anybody. Nobody should like me. I'm gonna wear black. And be really dramatic in that sense.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
He meets multiple criteria enough to the point where, you know, while we made the decision we want to avoid completely diagnosing people with our show, what we did want to do was highlight when we see symptoms of it, because it's not it's not fair or ethical to anyone to diagnose them without sitting with them and doing a proper assessment. So we wanted to make sure we were avoiding that. But what we did see is trauma symptoms.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has, like, what we call hypervigilance, which is being very protective, but, like, seeing everything kind of, like, as a threat and kind of having an over-exaggerated reaction to it. Like, his stuff with Rey, like, throwing away his lightsaber, feeling like helping her would just go badly when she gets pulled into the dark side, when she's doing that meditation thing, and he's like, you went right to the dark, and he just is like, not happening, bye. Like, that's inability to not go all the way to the worst case scenario when something happens that triggers your bad experience. So because Kylo went to the dark side, as soon as Rey even smells like she could be going towards the dark side, he like panics and ditches her.
Right.
And writes her off.
Right. And immediately. And that was one of the problems I think people had with the character of Luke. They're like, they were hoping that when Rey reached out to him and found him, that they'd just bring him back into the fold. But that's not realistic for someone that went through what he did. Mm-hmm. Like, when she goes to him and then like, he decides even to start helping her, like, he is faced with that trauma like you just described immediately, where you see like actually a really well-acted moment by Mark Hamill where he shows intense fear very quickly because he got triggered.
Well, because there's the deep fear of going through that trauma again. And in his very specific case, it is, I'm going to be a bad master, bad teacher, and I'm going to like mislead another student, make another student go dark because I am bad and I created this trauma and I'm not going to put myself in a position to have the same trauma again.
Yeah. And I think what we see with people who experience trauma or have a lot of traumatic experiences is that they often have really black and white thinking, and those the extremes that he has about, especially about Rey being bad and how there's no gray area at all. She can only be one thing. You can only be dark or the light. You can't have a mix. And I think what this movie does a really good job of is showing a mix, that there's a lot more than that. It's a lot more than just being the dark or the light.
Right, which is something I noticed, interestingly, they did with Rey's coloring in her outfits.
Oh, that's true.
Like, Rey was, she started out.
I didn't even realize that. You're right.
Star Wars is notorious for this. Like, the Rebels have always worn earth tones or bright colors, where the Imperials always wore muted blacks, whites, or grays. There was nothing in between. That was the only colors the Imperials had. But then you've got Rey, who starts out in like this the desert dweller garb, very similar to what Luke was wearing in A New Hope. But when you meet her at this time, she's starting to wear grays.
Okay.
But they're all, they're not gray like the Imperials wear. They're a lot of muted blues. But you're seeing like this blend of representation of,
and well, that everybody has a costume. Everybody has a way for you to tell who I am on the outside.
Well, and Luke's hella dramatic because he's wearing that white outfit when she rolls up. And then he changes to dark to, like, I guess, make a visual point to her that I am bad. Because like, when you're a trauma survivor, you've gone through a lot of trauma, the idea of entertaining that there's grayness is very scary. Because then how do you categorize that? And you have to be a little trusting of your environment. Because when you have a lot of trauma, like, even if we are thinking of Luke as someone who's been continuously, repeatedly traumatized, like, there's four parts of your brain that process any, stimuli you're getting.
Right.
And I'm really bad at behavioral neuroscience, so I don't know the names, but basically it goes through the one lobe, which visually sees what you're looking at. Then there's the part of your brain that categorizes it, the part of your brain that decides if it's a threat or not, and the part of your brain that reacts to that threat. And when you're traumatized over and over again, the two middle parts that categorize and sort and make decisions, the executive branch of your brain basically shuts down, and you keep going from stimuli to fight or flight reaction to emotional reaction. And you have to be, you get very black and white because you don't have the brain capacity or the brain ability to sort through stuff. Yeah. Everything's just like, I have to react now, because if I don't react now,
Yeah, because that part of hurt. Your yeah, and that because that part of your brain isn't even in the game.
Not firing.
It's not even yeah. It's not even a part of the decision making process anymore. It's been completely shut down because your body is just trying to take care of yourself, and your brain is just like, we need to do this, and there's been a threat, and now we have to make these changes, and we don't care what the executive side says because we're just trying to make sure that you're safe.
Mm-hmm.
Or doing whatever we have to. And I think some of Luke's trauma starts from thinking it more about the family aspect of things is in the Star Wars universe in general, it seems as though everybody gets ripped from their family of origin. So automatically, you start out in a place where you don't have an attachment to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to let go of that, or maybe you were never able to have an attachment, like Luke and Leia are removed, and Anakin is removed from his family, and Rey mm-hmm. is raised without her family. And the Jedis, when they go to little Jedi school, they are taken away from their family, and how traumatic that starting out that way can be, and how it makes other things difficult to manage and to understand. To mm-hmm. be able to understand relationships and to be able to really, sometimes even to create your identity.
Well, to have a strong foundation in which to encounter traumatic situations and know in the back of your mind, I'm still safe because I have this and this and this and this in right. my life that I can depend on.
Right.
So I guess it's a good point that if you start out from a space where you don't even necessarily have, like, your parents to talk to or rely on, and yeah. that's maybe poo-pooed,
yeah.
that... When you have trauma, where's your kind of safety net to land on, too?
And if you've never had one,
mm-hmm.
how does what happens after that? I think that in the beginning movies, when Luke is just this hero, right? This
right.
beautiful hero that mm-hmm. is just magical, like in a real situation, he's a lot more like the Luke that we see in this movie, who's kind of all over the place, and he's experienced so much trauma that he has to go and hide, or even like Kylo Ren, how mm-hmm. his trauma is, and how he reacts, and how his emotional regulation is all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have that attachment to, or a safe place, or even know what that's like to have a safe place, or to trust themselves.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Absolutely. And I think that, like, when some of the other things that we, when we look at the character of Luke, we see that Luke's got, some of the other things that we see are pretty clearly spelled out in trauma behavior. Like we see that Luke has some reckless and self-destructive behavior where he's isolating on an island alone. He yeah. left everyone.
Oh, yeah.
He's got reckless behavior. He's got an exaggerated startle response.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got hypervigilance.
Mm-hmm.
These things are all very clearly reminiscent of trauma. And when we look at Luke, some of the other things that we get introduced to right away, like where we learn how Luke's relationship with her is going to go. I'm still pretty staunchly against this and bothered by it, but the first thing Luke does when he gets his lightsaber is throws it.
Did that feel like a slap to your Star Wars loving face?
It felt a little bit like a slap to my Star Wars loving face, like directly
Luke,
in it.
Don't do it.
No.
Like you wanted him
you might
to
eat it. Oh, I guess not.
But that yeah. is like that. Is that not like a classical representation to him, like a symbol of his trauma, or at least who he was when all that bad stuff happened
getting
to him?
Throwing away that identity of himself, that he's not that person anymore.
Well, and that's very valid. That's absolutely valid. He's thrown away that part of himself. But also, what we don't consider is the last time he saw that lightsaber, he had two massive dramas where he lost his hand.
Yeah,
by his dad,
who he just found out was his dad.
Ugh, rough stuff.
Which happened to be a murderous villain in a black suit who...
It's fucking terrifying.
Is terrifying.
Well, like, the bad guy. The bad yeah. guy is your dad. And also, if I'm remembering correctly, I'm sure Luke had all these fantasies about who his dad was.
I mean,
he wasn't raised by his dad.
What kid
and
do you
so,
work with who doesn't
yeah.
know, who maybe didn't...
Yeah, a lot of kids who aren't raised by their parents will make, like, an idealized fantasy of them. And so I'm sure, well, I mean,
in any
everybody
situation.
Running around those movies was like, your father was one of the greatest Jedis that ever lived. And then
right.
he finds out that his dad is actually the capital letters bad guy. So that's
the
all
worst. He's
trauma,
the worst.
Trauma, trauma.
Yeah.
And I think another classic, Kylo is also a classic trauma in the same ways. Very black and white. If you're not with him, you're against him. Like, he either has, he's either, you're either 100% compliant with him, mm-hmm. or he literally needs to destroy you.
Right.
It's all very control-oriented. Like, Hannah, you brought up emotional regulation, which is how it sounds, like your ability to regulate how you're feeling and to have emotions and handle them properly and kind of siphon them out. Like, he got none of that.
No, he got none of that. And with Kylo, something that's not covered unless you're a nerd like me and have read the books, which is...
which we haven't.
We haven't. We have.
I have.
Yeah.
But we've...
But you're so valuable.
What you learn about Kylo is that Kylo wasn't told by his mother that Vader was his grandfather. That was kept secret from almost everyone by Princess Leia until she was betrayed by a friend of hers who found out that Vader was her father. And Kylo finds out via the HoloNet, which is the intergalactic space word for the internet.
Oh my god.
It makes me so happy that you know that.
Where has this book been my whole life?
Exactly.
It's essential to your life now to read this
it
and to know.
It seems as though it is, actually.
What the HoloNet and a data pad are, a.k.a. a computer. Or a tablet now.
But so you could argue that that's a similar... Because it seems like in these newer movies that Kylo always felt that there was something very bad in him.
Yeah.
And so that was probably traumatic for him to then learn that his grandfather, his blood, was the baddest. And so it probably reaffirmed all his negative worries and deepest, darkest fears about himself. And
maybe also some of the... I wonder if... Because we know that Snoke was doing stuff mm-hmm. before... Like, mm-hmm. using the Force, or whatever. The Sith don't call it that, do they?
Yes.
They call it the same thing. Okay. Having to keep all of that inside, because there's not really a good way to talk mm-hmm. about the dark and the light. I mean, like, I don't think in Jedi school that they, besides identifying very clearly that the dark is bad news, mm-hmm. That there's not a way to talk about what if you're in between? What if that's coming up in you? Or what if now I just found out that my grandfather is literally the worst dark guy ever. And so does that mean that I am? Does that mean that I don't have a choice and I can only be dark?
Right, my grandfather is a monster. My blood is a monster. He must have grown up hearing stories of the evils of Darth Vader. Like, in the universe, like, Palpatine was generally regarded as evil, but Vader was the enforcer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Vader was the face of it. Like,
yeah, Palpatine was, like, the manipulator, master manipulator in the back, like, pulling the strings and making shit messy as fuck.
Right.
Only Darth Vader came in and, like...
Well, he was the face of the badness.
And the Sith. He was the face of the Sith.
And so
Palpatine was in there.
Kylo probably already has the Sith knocking around in his head. I guess we would consider what we call little T traumas, which is this little situations that are traumatic, which is probably Snoke creeping in on him, probably being a little emotionally abusive or grooming or whatever, being a creep. And then the big T trauma, which is what we consider when it's like a big singular event.
Right, that involves threat of loss of life or damage to your physical self or damage to your loved ones.
So this big T was Luke standing over his ass with a lightsaber, like, you're so bad, even though I love you, I'm going to kill you.
And how somebody with, and most likely Luke was his biggest attachment.
Yeah.
I would imagine, because Han was...
It's probably his closest thing to a dad, to be honest.
Yeah, because Han is, you know, he's a motherfucker all over the place. So his biggest attachment was probably to him to have that rug pulled out from underneath him. He has no idea who he is. He's a teenager. Teenagers are already, in general, going through so many different things. And to have the person that he probably felt the most connected to, and was also related to as well, actually, to have that pulled out from underneath him. Well, his response of killing everybody and not being able to manage his emotion, because that's like a break in his identity.
Mm-hmm.
Because now who the hell is he?
Right. That had to be... Like, that one was a beautiful... moment in the film. I enjoyed that because they didn't show you which was right.
Well, it's a good demonstration of how when you experience a trauma, especially if there's multiple people involved, how that situation can look very different, or the narrative of that can be very different for each person involved. Because Luke did kind of like omit a little bit, like, dress it up a little bit for Rey at first. But yeah. his story and Kylo's story were not really wrong. Even though they were very different, they weren't wrong.
Yeah.
And right. I think a lot of times when we work with families and stuff where traumas happen to a lot of them, that can be a really hard, especially if it's like abuse in the family where they can get really, or a trauma in the family where they can get really stuck is, that's not how I remember it, or that's not how it was for me.
Where the perception of the situation can really change the relationships in the family.
But because of how your brain dealt with that trauma, you can remember things in a very different way. The same story, and like in a very, very different way.
A very different way. But with treatment, you can learn to see in a more broad perspective of the event, and it's something we can talk about later when we hit the treatment section. We'll certainly talk about ways that you can do that. That's one of the things that I'm trained in and happy to talk about, but we'll get to that later. When we look at these characters, we've covered the trauma we've seen in Luke and Kylo Ren, where we've seen multiple traumas on both sides. We've seen trauma in Luke in that he's faced with losing his hand and finding out about Darth Vader being his father again. He's faced with taking on the role of mentorship with Rey, which was a relationship that resulted in what I'm assuming is the biggest trauma of his life, where he fails his nephew, mm-hmm. who his sister and one of his best friends entrusted him with.
Yeah.
And he failed. But not only did he failed to prevent his nephew, his student, from becoming the next Vader.
Oh, I thought you meant like, or the next Luke. Like, he was probably like touted as the next big thing.
That's a good point. I didn't even consider that.
On either side, yeah. Absolutely, good point.
Because everyone says that throughout the movie, like, we all could tell that he was really powerful. And like, he says the thing to Rey, like, I've only met someone else as powerful as you, and I wasn't scared enough then. So, yeah.
Yeah. Right, and I didn't even consider that a point. That's a good point.
The guilt and the responsibility that Luke, in that moment, I mean, for him to go away, yeah, absolutely. It totally makes sense that he went away and hid himself and punished himself by being isolated. And then by what you brought up before about the way that he acts around Rey and just being kind of all over the place and kind of giving her ways to show her that she shouldn't be around him.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because he's not safe.
He's dangerous, he can't help you. All he can do is get you into a position where you have enough power to learn you can possibly destroy everything. And have taught you just enough to harness that before he fails you and you go off on a dark path. So we've covered a lot of the trauma we've seen in them, and then in the trauma in Kylo of being separating out from his family, not having an identity, and wanting to identify with the one thing that's been pressed up to him through the manipulation by Snoke, which leads into the next section we wanted to talk about, which is the abusive relationships that are present throughout Star Wars.
I have 2 pages in my notes on abusive relationships in this movie. It's just rampant. I mean, Snoke is the clear, like, everybody probably can see what's happening there.
Yeah.
Snoke, he has this... Well, he kind of groomed him. He was probably, with that mental stuff with Kylo back when Kylo was still a Jedi, probably preparing him, what we call grooming, to be close to him, kind of creating Kylo's identity so he can, you know, use him. I think one thing I noticed when I watched it for the third time was the dynamic Snoke has of having 2 kids that he basically pits against each other.
Right.
General Hux and Kylo. That's something when I've worked with families and when I've worked with families where one of the parents is abusive, more when I've worked with adults who had parents who are abusive.
Right.
There's a lot of competition in the family between the siblings. There's a lot of like pitting the siblings against each other to break down whatever bond they might have. I don't know if it's like an intrinsic thing of like staying the alpha dog by making sure that your victims don't group together and come against you.
Yeah. I think it's also a part of a way to keep it a secret.
Oh, that's also true.
I think it's part of why I believe that they pit their victims up against each other is to keep it a secret. And to keep them in check and to have somebody else be another set of eyes.
For sure. I mean, a classic example of that is he's talking to Hux Snoke is talking to Hux in the throne room. He's giving him a lot of compliments, like, you really handled that well, like, praise, praise, praise. And then as he's, and Hux looks all smug, he's walking away, Kylo's entering, and then as soon as, like, the door shuts on Hux, Snoke's saying to Kylo, he is such an, like, he's such a dumb asshole. Like, he's basically, like, shutting him down. And that does two effective...
Right, what do you call him, a blunt instrument?
Something. Like an idiot in some form. But that does two effective abusive parent things, which is, one, create a weird bond with you and the other kid of, like, we're in on the real secret, though. Like, you and I have got the bond. This kid's a dum-dum, but you and I got it going on.
Right.
So it creates that bond. But also, it's kind of more subliminally informs the kid that just because I'm saying nice things to you to your face doesn't mean I'm actually thinking these other things to your to the other people. Like, I'm praising you now, but that doesn't mean I'm not talking shit about you over somewhere. So it kind of keeps you on your toes. It keeps you from... Even if there's a bond being created, you can't really trust that bond, even in the toxic way it's being built.
Right.
Right. And one of the things that, that I noticed that builds on that is when we're talking about some of this praise and shaming that is used in abusive relationships and grooming, is that right away in the beginning, after the dreadnought gets blown up, we see Snoke come in over the... hologram.
Oh, yeah. And just beat the shit out of him.
And just destroyed Hux. You see Hux going, like, getting afraid, like, because he knows he's about to get reamed here. Mm-hmm. He's going to get chewed out. But he's like, great, I'll take the call in my private chambers. And then Snoke's face just appears huge and, like, not only, like, publicly destroys him, but then, like, force shames, like, abuses him by, like, dragging him down on the floor with a force and spinning him around in front of everybody, taking and undermining his command. He is the general, he is this commander of the armies of the First Order, and the Supreme Leader just made him into a fool in front of everyone.
Yeah, he does a really good job of constantly undermining both of them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Almost in a little bit different ways. He's a lot more physical and aggressive with Hux, and way more psychological and subtle, as subtle as he can be, with Kylo. Like, when he's like, you got that stupid helmet, and he calls him a child, and he, like, rags that helmet.
Right.
Like, right after, he probably helped him make that stupid helmet. And he probably propped him up to want to be, you know, Vader Jr.
He probably was like, do you want to look? This Vader had this. Vader had a helmet. I would imagine. That's what I picture.
Well, what she did, he said, like, flat out, a new Vader.
Yeah. But then he's instantly like, you trying to be a Vader with your dumbass helmet?
Right.
Like, I remember that felt very, like, visceral. When he said that, I was like, oh, that's a deep cut.
Where I take that ridiculous thing off.
Yeah, that is a very, I felt very shaming in a very real way when he said that.
Well, having the person that, because I think another thing that Snoke does really well, unfortunately, is making you feel like he's the only one who understands you.
Yes, I'm
the only one who really knows what you're like. I'm the only one who understands how much power you have.
How special you are.
I'm the only one who believes that you are the next Vader. Nobody else.
Everyone else
that.
Is trying to cage you in.
Yeah, and I just want you to do what you want. But really, he has a whole fucking plan for what he wants to do, and he uses Hux to do that.
Right, and he does. And, like, that's a key point of abusive and toxic relationships that people don't miss. It's getting thrown around in the media a lot with the term gaslighting. Like, that gets thrown a lot. But one of the things that happens as part of that gaslighting process, where someone starts retelling you a truth over and over and over to the point where it becomes confusing to the victim of what is actually true, because they, like, in, repeat it over and over. There's somebody, I can't quite think of the name of who, does a really great job of that at the American government.
No, but...
And Fox News is the mouthpiece for that. I'm not biased at all. But then we see, with this situation, we see Snoke is isolating. He isolates Kylo Ren away from his identity as Ben Solo.
Yes.
Into this monster of Kylo Ren, the master of Knights of Ren. Kill your dad.
Kill your dad.
Here's the thing, like, one of the things that isn't shared in the movies, another book thing, is that he did the same thing with Hux.
Oh, okay.
Hux.
Really?
Hux.
It's okay.
Yes, Hux. I'm sorry. Huxon used Phasma to kill his father.
Oh, so it's this whole like destroy your. Well, I mean, it's destroying your identity in a very like real way, like,
right?
Destroying your roots, destroying your foundations, destroying your connections and attachments, literally.
Right, because Hux's father was responsible for building the First Order. He was one of the ones responsible for the Stormtrooper training program, for indoctrinating children and all of that, including like his own son and like building his son up to be this person. And then Snoke and Hux end up manipulating or conspiring to get Phasma to kill his father. So this is a isolating pattern that Snoke shows over and over.
Well, and just another way that trauma works with this as well is that making you have to give up everything. You have to give up everything to be in a relationship with Snoke, which a lot of times with, like, when we talk about domestic violence, or when we talk about that kind of abusive relationship where you have to, your identity has to change with them. You have to be, you're my wife. You're not her daughter. You're my apprentice. Wife.
Correct.
You're my apprentice.
Like, you're I even wrote, like, in the movie, he keeps saying, I found you. Like, I found you. I discovered saw who you were. Like,
I saw the good in you, or I saw the bad in you, or whatever. That whole idea that, again, that this person's vision of you is all that you can be.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I saw the raw power. All of that. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, and even to be critical of the Jedi, they do the same thing. Like, it's like, you are a Jedi now. You are my apprentice. Like, you are moving away from your family, and we're isolating you in this school where all you are is this thing. And so the Jedi, and him being in the Jedi,
and you're special because you get to come to the school and you can feel
and you
the
can
force.
Do force and all that stuff. And so it kind of lays the groundwork for someone like Snoke to come right in and misappropriate it. Like, it, like, pushes narrative on it, which isn't that dissimilar.
I mean, it's not.
No hate to the Star Wars franchise, but it's not dissimilar.
Yeah.
It's not. It's not dissimilar. It's, but it switches the focus from where the Jedi are focused on the benevolence of the group. Granted, it's an egotistical way, which this movie does a great job of pointing out in Luke's training of Rey with the Force, of, like, starting to break of that. Like, the Force doesn't belong to the Jedi.
Yeah.
Like, switching that and making that point, blowing that open. But what we do see is with the Sith, like, they make the focus on your power and growth and what you can do with the Force, whereas the Jedi are more, how do you use your specialness to facilitate the good of others? You don't have attachments. You're not really a human. You're not, you're different. You're separate. You're a Jedi now. You're...
So kind of the individual versus collectivism idea.
Right.
I hadn't thought about it like that.
But it's also just that thing of, you don't get to create your own identity. There's no sense of, like, well, you said the individual versus the collective. Like, there's no foundation for, I know who I am regardless. You know, it's all filtered through other people's view of me, other people's concept of who I should be, what I can be. And it just, and not having parents and all that stuff.
Right, well, who my master says I can be.
Yeah. It seems as though nobody has somebody who's protecting them. They don't have a safe place, and they don't have anyone who is protecting them. And they're just supposed to, because they're Jedi, they're just supposed to accept all of these new rules and this, all these new relationships. Mm-hmm. And that this is the only kind of relationship that you can have. And really not having opportunities, which is why I think a little bit, so one of the other things that I kind of notice that goes along with relationships is that the people in the movie seem to have really close relationships with their robots. R2-D2 and C-3PO and BB-8, and how excited they are when they see them. And how, and again, not that they're not excited to see each other. Like, there's definitely a couple different chances, like with Finn and Rey. But it seems like they're allowed, that is an emotion, that is a relationship that is allowed. You're allowed to be open and be excited, but like in everywhere else, where else do you see that? Like, who in the Star Wars universe is touched with love?
But I mean, I think it's probably...
by somebody that they, is in their family of origin.
I don't think it's dissimilar from how people who, I mean, how many therapy pets are there now? People are able to connect with animals in a way that they can't connect with people when they've had really hard life experiences, trauma, anxiety, stuff like that. So, I mean, it might be an approximation of that. Like, droids are a small, controllable, non-human that will be unconditional towards you, that you can pour all your love into, and you don't have to really worry about getting hurt.
Right. Which is one of the interesting things that they did that builds on that was when one of the more emotional moments in that movie, one of the most emotional moments of that movie, like the one of the ones that the guy just got you right in the feels.
Yeah.
Was when, it wasn't when Chewie busted into the hut and started roaring at Luke, like his old friend who went through all these adventures with him and like braved death with him on the Death Star, came in to go, it wasn't even the, where's Han? Like, that moment of pain and, like, realization in Luke's face of where's Han.
Goosebumps. Forgot about that moment.
That didn't even get you right in the feels as much as when a droid...
Ugh, I knew you were going to say R2-D2.
Yeah. When R2-D2 pops up and puts the puts image of the, Leia up. Yeah. The Obi-Wan Kenobi, You're My Only Hope video up. Like, that is one of the most emotionally powerful moments of the whole film, but it was with a droid. Or maybe the loss of Carrie Fisher probably plays into that for us, but even without that, I think that moment was so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But it was with a droid.
Yeah.
I think
if we would... So, to me, if he had been a part of his family of origin, that would be somebody in the family reminding him, right?
Yeah.
Didn't you remember when...
You were like this.
You were like this, and you just needed help, and you needed somebody to come out of the... to be able to see the light, and to be able to have hope again.
Like a touchstone support.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think one of the most impressive things, I guess emotionally intelligent things this movie does...
Yes.
...is when Kylo does destroy Snoke, snap, like, you know, cuts him in half. In every other movie, I feel like that would have been the moment where he was like, I'm gonna be good, because... Rey showed up, and she's pretty cute. We've got this connection, and we're going to go right off in the sunset, and I'm going to wear white now, and, like, all that junk. But in this movie, he did what people do who have been continuously abused, who have gotten no treatment yet, which is he just becomes that person instantaneously. Like, instead of being like, okay, girl, we fought together now, let's get into it. Because she even expects him to do that. She's like, well, let's go. Why aren't you helping? Blah, blah, blah. And he's like, no. I need you now to do that thing with me where we're going to destroy everybody we love together and you're going to join me on my terms and we're going to go to my safe space, which is destroying everything so I can be in control of everything. And that, and he has no gray about it. And as soon as she says no, I don't even think she says no, like, it could be definitely a no let's talk about it moment, but I knew as soon as she rejected him, he was going to go the whole different direction and be like, well, then that's that. Because relationships are either totally... Because when you're an abused, it's really enmeshed and you're really entangled in each other. And so it's that thing where either we're totally entangled in each other and in our agenda, or you are against me.
Right.
And he, that's really done really beautifully, where I think in any other kind of movie... it would have been a totally different ending. He would have gone with her, and it would have been very, like, love story, happy, snappy. And in this one, he recreates his trauma, he becomes the abuser, and then he continues that narrative all the way to the end of the movie.
Which is more likely to be accurate of what we would see in someone in his situation who has grown up traumatized like that without some sort of intervention. Not that people can't change, because people absolutely can change, but typically when you've encountered the degree of abuse and trauma and manipulation that he has, you need some help sorting through that.
For sure.
Well, and also, just even the idea of being able to trust a therapist.
Right.
I mean, and being able to be in that place to even do that. Because he's out to destroy everything. He's like, I'm gonna knock this whole fucking thing down. And that's, and also because I think a little bit of what happens too is that when people are in abusive situations, they, I just lost my train of thought.
So, well, I mean, when they're in abusive situations, they don't have any other models of how to be healthy. Like, I don't know where Han and Leia were his whole life, probably off doing their own thing. Then at a very young age, he was shipped off to basically Jedi boarding school.
Yeah.
And so, and then at a, still a young age, he was shifted into this very enmeshed, weird, gross relationship with Snoke. Where I'm sure he didn't have even, like, frivolous girlfriends or whatever, like, and so his only example of a relationship is being hyper-controlling, and, like, a good example of it, too, is the way he kind of tries to woo Rey and, like, show her how much she means to him, and how much he cares for her is to say, you are nothing, but you're not nothing to me. Like, I feel like he says that genuinely thinking that that's, like, a compliment, or that's, like, a builder-upper, whereas right. that like is that's a horrible thing to say to somebody.
Or, like, that's and how he shows his affection. He doesn't know how to show affection because no one has ever showed him affection.
Or that affection is being totally enmeshed with someone.
Yeah.
That's what love is.
I only know who I am if you're with me.
Well, I only
which
know...
Which is, I think, the poison that Snoke put in his mind. Because, like, you know, like, Leia showed him love, and they had a close relationship from the fact when he was in the womb, like, she had a forced connection to him. Mm. But then when he separates out to Luke, and then Snoke starts manipulating, mm-hmm. like, it's like he had, like, a different sort of father figure, because Han was out in the galaxy a lot. Being Han. Mm-hmm. But
looking good, though. Yeah.
He's out doing that, but then in that moment you're talking about where you see, like, Kylo start to turn. Like, there was a lot happening there, and that was an opportunity, mm-hmm. like, where a lot of fans got mad, too, because a lot of fans...
Because they wanted him to, like, switch teams?
They wanted somebody to switch teams.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people wanted Rey to change. Like, they thought that would be a better story to see Rey turn to the dark side and Kylo take the hero journey. A lot of people wanted
like
to see that.
Oh my goodness!
A lot of people wanted to see that, which it would have made a good story, an interesting story. But, like, there's also some societal consequences to that that would have happened. Like, here's yet another opportunity for a woman to come in and be a hero. Mm-hmm. And Disney has been really, like, making a conscious effort to build up female heroes in this series, which is something that some of the fanboys are being serious douchebags about. Well,
that's a whole
honestly.
Other episode, buddy.
It's a whole other episode, but I would just touch on that. Is the
so many things I'm not saying.
So many things people wanted to happen there and see, like, Rey switch and become the villain and have her take that over and her become the new Sith and her turn dark and Kylo have the redemption arc. But, like, I think the last thing we need is to see another story based on a white male coming through and being the hero, where we could have this opportunity to see, like, this strong female character that Disney built up reject the darkness that's offered to her that mm-hmm. might give her some sense of identity that she desperately needs and wants. But you see in that moment, both of them lock into two different perspectives, and you see very mm-hmm. clearly that there's now the divide.
Yeah,
Kylo's
it bummed me out.
The gray that the movie has been hinting at in that moment is now gone.
But that's
Rey
like,
is fully identified with the light at that point, and Kylo is fully identified with the dark. There is no more blend.
But I think when people who are traumatized by abusive relationships, when push comes to shove and kind of like your primitive lizard brain pops up, that is the kind of reaction you would take. Because in that moment he had to make like a split decision, and he was asking her to make a split decision. And in those moments you go to your extremes because you just don't have time to process, especially if you are traumatized, especially if you've been in abusive relationships.
Right.
And so of course he was going to take that path. I mean, I was disappointed from just a pure like watching a movie lover fan perspective that they didn't like fall in love and like it together.
Yeah.
But
I watch them make out.
Raylo.
It makes a lot.
Team Raylo.
Oh my God.
Brittany's on Team Raylo.
No. Even. But it makes a lot. I respect more that he reacted that way because that is realistic. He would go full blown. You have to come to, like, I'm making you feel special because that's how my parent made me feel special. That's how you show someone you love them is by isolating them in your love in that very specific way and just not being able to see how toxic that is, even though he just destroyed his Snoke for doing the same thing to him. Like, because I think for a lot of people, I could imagine watching that and be like, well, he just recognized by killing him that that guy was bad and their relationship was bad, so why would he immediately do that? Because I have a lot of people who I've seen who were abused as kids, and they can see themselves being that abuser to their children, to their loved one, and not being able to get themselves out of it on their own. Mm-hmm. Like, they can see it, mm-hmm. but they don't know how to change without extra help from a therapist or something similar.
Yeah.
So, do we want to jump into the treatment portion?
Absolutely. We're going to talk about the treatment. So, one of the things that we kind of covered briefly in the beginning is that all three of us share the same license. So, we're all qualified to do the same things, and all of us have worked in all three of these areas of working with children or working with families and working with individuals. However, each one of us is a little more specialized in these areas where I'm more focused on the individual. And then Brittany and Hannah each have their own points of view that will be a little bit different than mine, coming from a different perspective. And we wanted to offer a blend of those, where Hannah is a marriage and family therapist in addition to being an LCVC. And Brittany's training was strongly based in children. And we wanted to like share the perspectives of like what treatments we thought might be able to address these things. So I'll start out with Luke. With trauma, one of the treatments I'm trained in is EMDR, which stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, which is a treatment that operates on a theory that a lot of dysfunctional memories are the basis for trauma, that we have a adaptive information processing network in our brains that allows us to synthesize and integrate information like RAM of a computer, where you have random access memory that allows you to pull up information that's useful and integrate it all together, where traumatic memories get kind of frozen in their own chain separate from that, so you can only access them in state-dependent form. So if I were to have Luke come into my office, that would probably be the approach I would want to do. We would cover learning coping skills for the traumas that he's done, learn how to do bodily relaxation to get control of your body, to get control of your mind, to be able to cope with the reactions to the difficult things you're going to have to process, and start there. And then I would want to move into EMDR to work with him on using his brain, which is part of what eye movement desensitization and reprocessing does. It helps to engage both sides of the brain and allow you to access memories more fully, but also remaining present in the future so that you can re-experience that memory in a safe space instead of the activated space you were in it before. And that helps to allow you to reintegrate the traumatic memory from an isolated channel into a more balanced perspective so you can see the picture through the whole spectrum of what happened. I've been through EMDR on both sides of the couch now, as in being a client and a therapist, and it's amazing what it does. When you look at it, it's almost like having blinders on, where you can only see a narrow tunnel vision perspective. You see the same part of your traumatic images, your memories, play over and over again. Like in this movie, I imagine that scene of Kylo or Ben Solo waking up with the fear he described so accurately, like seeing a scared boy, seeing his master standing over him. I guarantee you Luke plays that over and over and over again, just like they showed in that movie.
And he probably has nightmares about it. Oh, he probably wakes up in cold sweats about it. Like,
oh, yeah. I can't imagine that he wouldn't. And I've also been on both sides of... No, I haven't done... I'm not trained to do EMDR, but I've experienced it as a client. And the way that it feels is just kind of like sucking out the negative feelings out of the memory, kind of. That's how I think of it when it's happening, or what my experience has been.
I had awesome. A similar one to like that. Like for me, like it was like starting that narrow picture. You see the same part of it over and over.
It's a good way to describe it.
And then when you start doing the eye movements and engaging your whole brain and allowing your body to work the way it's supposed to, because EMDR works on the concept that your body heals itself. If you cut your hand and you have nothing blocking the wound, that the wound will heal itself. However, if it gets dirt or an infection in it, then it won't heal until you clean that out. It operates the brain, or on the concept that the brain and trauma operate the same way, whereas the traumatic memory blocks the natural healing, so you have to clear it out to the point where the brain can then reintegrate. And for me, when I went through the images that were stuck in my mind and the experiences and the feelings, it was like looking at a box and watching like the same clip, like a GIF, play over and over again. And then when we finally went through that, it's like I could see the whole movie play, not just that clip over and over, but my like horse blinders were off and I could see the whole picture again, detached from the emotion.
Yeah.
Which was the important part, is that it helps you shed what is no longer useful, which are the negative emotions, so that you can remember and access those memories clearly. I describe it like when you're watching Netflix, when you pull up Netflix, there's the big screen on the picture, and that's like the traumatic memory. It's this big, huge picture that's just playing right in front of you, and it just goes on autopilot. Whereas EMDR helps you shrink it down to the little fast forward bar at the bottom where like, oh, I watched this part already. And you watch and you have no reaction to it and you just watch it go by. And you move the big picture down into the little one and it helps. So that would be my approach with Luke and what I would want to do if I were the therapist on this case.
So when I was thinking about treatment, and I would probably do this with all three of them, like not necessarily in the same room, but just I would want to help them be able to identify what a healthy relationship looks like and mm-hmm. probably would do a lot of role playing with them about what that looks like and creating safe space, which is similar to what you're talking about, Ben, mm-hmm. using EMDR and having a safe place to talk about your feelings, but also just being able to identify feelings mm-hmm. and to be able to identify them in others. I think it would be one of the things that would be really important would maybe even to have Luke and Kylo Ren, if that was possible, to have them in the room together and to have them try to work on being connected and working on repairing that attachment break that they had and mm-hmm. helping them be able to talk to each other about it and to draw out what was going on with both of them. Because really, mm-hmm. in my mind, if they sit down in a room and they can talk about what they were both feeling at that time and being able to kind of, it will be like a like soothing both of them. And so that's what I would do mm-hmm. just as a marriage and family therapist. I think that that's one of the things that I would really like to do. And I think I would want to help Rey be able to, I think she has a lot of resiliency and I think that I would want to help her claim her identity mm-hmm. and reinforce that she has been able to manage for a long time on her own, and that while it's nice to be able to connect to other people, kind of she kind of goes full in mm-hmm. and doesn't and has a hard time making decisions, that can be really important.
And she gets so yeah. attached too yeah. so yeah. quickly.
Like Han yeah. becomes her dad, then Luke becomes her dad, and so when yeah. they disappoint her or when they get ripped from her, it's like it is. We haven't really talked about her a lot, but
yeah,
she doesn't really have. I guess the way that she's demonstrated with like her trauma and her isolation is that. She's bad boundaries.
Yeah.
You could argue. Yeah. That she gets so close so quickly to people around her. Mm-hmm. And then she kind of gives them so much. I mean, the Resistance, who are they to her? And yet she's yeah. willing to, like, die for them and do all this stuff for them that they haven't done anything.
I mean, she's just living her life out there, yeah. you know, getting metal and getting food and do whatever she needs to do. And so hanging
I think
it, out. Yeah.
So I think it's good what you say, like, who is she without other people?
Yeah.
Who is she on her own?
But I think I would really focus on healthy relationships and helping them identify them and understanding what it might feel like. Because I would imagine that it would feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because they haven't experienced it.
Mm-hmm. I think from my perspective, because I was trying to think of it like, because I'm a technically a kid therapist. Well, I'm a kid, I do a lot of kid work. And if, let's say, Kylo Ren was a teenager coming to me or something, I would do, even as an adult, I would do... probably do what we call Rogerian technique, which is just like, which is Carl Rogers. He's not dissimilar to the other famous Mr. Rogers, where they're both known for a very like calm, soothing approach. He is known for what's called unconditional positive regard, which is kind of exactly how it sounds, which is just no matter what your client says or tells you or behaves in the office, you still are very gentle with them and kind to them, and you don't...
And in their corner.
You're on their side as much as you can be without backing up toxic things
right,
they're saying.
Absolutely.
But
right.
It's very much like, I'm not going anywhere, no matter what you do or what you say. I'm still going to be in this office meeting with you.
Right.
And I'm going to be here for you. And I think it's very uncomfortable for people who have had these relationships where everything's very conditional. Abusive relationships, there's a lot of like, I only will love you if you're doing this or you're being mm-hmm. this person. Mm-hmm. And so for someone like Kylo Ren, who's had his identity wrapped up in other people's idea of who he is, and also has never had a relationship that's just, I'm here for you no matter what, or no matter how you behave, just being very present with him. And sometimes what that looks like is very kind of what people think of when they think of, like, parodies of therapists, where you kind of just sit there and you go, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, I hear you. That must have been really hard. Where you're not really giving a lot of feedback on your part or even talking that much. You're just kind right. of being physically there with them. So that they can just get used to the discomfort of being in a space where it's not chaotic, where it's just very yeah. calm and the person's not going anywhere. And a lot of times people, either consciously or unconsciously, will try to push you away as the therapist, like tell you really bad things they've done or what they consider bad things about themselves or like really gross things they've done because they want you to react and push them away and tell them that they're too ill or too far gone for you to help them. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times with people who've gone through these experiences and kids who are really traumatized and touchy and irritable, they will do a lot of stuff like that to try to get your goat and to try to push you away. And just the act of being there with them and continuously confirming to them, I'm not going anywhere, is very powerful and can create that relationship. So that in itself would be what I would do with him.
Yeah.
And then on top of, let's play with the idea that, like, Luke is his dad and Luke mm-hmm. did him wrong, you know?
Right.
I think, because what I really noticed in the movie, which I thought was very powerful, and I was, like, so happy as a therapist that he did it, was in the end scene when Luke pops up and confronts, yes. well, confronts, quote-unquote, confronts Kylo at the end.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And he doesn't say, I forgive you. He says, I'm sorry. And I think that is a big thing. I work with parents, especially parents of kids who are having a really hard time and maybe have been misbehaving and acting out and, you know, getting in trouble a lot, is it becomes this thing where everything's about their behavior and them earning back the parent's trust and proving to the parent that they're, quote-unquote, good, all that kind of stuff. And so a lot of times for the parents, they say, stop worrying about them proving themselves to you and becoming a good kid and just tell, like, by saying, I'm sorry, or I hear you, or I'm with you, you're just proving to them that you're not going anywhere either as the parent. And stop making it about the behavior and make it about the feelings behind the behavior. Like, a lot of parents I see, and this makes perfect sense, they'll be like, he just keeps acting out, and why would he do that? And he screamed at me, and so I had to give him consequences because he was acting out, which makes a lot of sense in most cases. But a lot of times with parents, I'll say, well, there's a feeling that they're not dealing with underneath that behavior, and that's why they're acting out. So instead of focusing on the behavior, which they already know is bad and that they are bad for doing, instead say, hey, what's going on underneath that? How are you feeling right now? Because then you're making it more about learning how to talk about your feelings and identify your feelings underneath it than changing the symptom of your feelings. It's like the behaviors is like if you had the flu and you were just treating the cough.
Yeah.
Like the cough isn't the thing that's causing the situation. The behavior isn't the root problem. It's the feelings. That's the root problem. Yeah. And so that's kind of what I would encourage, that feelings and being a consistent present and as a therapist and as the parent, just telling them to let go of the behavior for now and just show them that I'm not going anywhere and that I'm going to help you.
And that you're not going to do any behavior that's that bad that I won't still be here.
Mm-hmm.
And helping kids, because kids are black and white in their development sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so that, I mean, the way that they develop, and sometimes that's part of
mm-hmm.
how they think, and that's just how they are.
So speaking of kids, there's something that I was thinking of. We'd have to go back to The Force Awakens to really tie this in.
Mm-hmm.
But when we look at Rey.
Yeah.
Rey shows us a clear moment that defines her identity.
Okay.
Which is when her parents left her.
Leave her.
And that's like drives her to even flirt with the dark side in this movie.
Yeah, because she wants to be somebody.
She wants to be somebody. She wants to know who she is. Her Rey would be another, honestly, prime candidate for me for EMDR, like going back to that moment.
Oh, that's a very flashbulb moment.
Yeah. Very, very huge flashbulb, which we see when we do like that flashback scene, which is the first time Star Wars ever did anything like that, is that, like, they cover that scene where she is going back to that moment where her parents leave and she sees the spaceship. I guarantee you she, like Luke, sees that moment over and over again with
They show
Ben
that
Solo.
In the movie. Every time it seems like she closes her eyes.
Right.
It does seem like she's having nightmares.
She's going back to that. So if we were to look at Rey, I would again want to go back to that and also like, work with her from the standpoint of how she tells her narrative. Mm-hmm. Like how she describes her story. How does she think about herself?
God, how does she even start it?
Well, she's stuck. She's stuck in my life and who I am will start once my parents come back.
Right.
Once I know who to glom onto.
Once I know who to be.
Yeah.
And that involves a lot. I mean, so there's probably not a lot of self-trust, even though, like you said, like, Hannah, like, reframing for her, like, she's done so much to help herself survive on that planet by herself as a little baby girl.
Yeah.
And so she's got a lot of good skills and a lot of survival instincts and, you know, why does she need other people to tell her who she is? Mm-hmm. She's taken care of herself for that long. Why can't she see that as all these strong, positive traits for her identity?
Right.
Absolutely.
Which I think is something that she eventually does. Like, at that moment where she decides, like, we see... This, I thought, was, like, another example of, like, the symbolism in the movie that I thought was just fantastically done. They've never showed the escape pods in the Millennium Falcon before. We knew they had them because Han mentioned them. We knew they were there.
For sure.
When Rey goes, this is the first time we see her in that Jedi training outfit, essentially.
Yeah.
So she's changed outfits, but we also see Rey then defy Luke, declare her own identity. But in order to do that, she's being reborn again. She enters into a coffin-like state.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
That is very symbolic.
It's very symbolic. She enters into a coffin to, like, put that side of herself to rest, so she lets it go, and then it further gets put to bed by Kylo continuing to gaslight her and abusing her by going, like, say it. You know it's just, you know the truth. Say it.
But I think even with that example you just gave, which I think would be a good thing to do with her as a therapist, is why is everything so extra? Why does she have to kill part of herself to do this thing? Why does she have to be that person, like, that person to those people or this organization, or she has to be dark or light?
Why can't she just be who she is? Why does she have to do something to prove...
But I think that's very common with people that you see who are struggling with their identity because they had no family or bad family relationships. It's just, you're trying. I think there is a concept that everyone's identity is very solid in that very extreme way, when really everyone's identity is constantly evolving and is abstract and is more gray. And I think that's just a development that she's going through pretty nicely through the movie.
Right. And it you see it culminate because she's got this connection with Kylo where she's like, oh, it's special because he can talk to me and we can have this connection through the Force. And then that gets betrayed by Snoke, who's, you know, shown to be manipulating yet again. But then we see at the end of the movie where she shuts the door of the Falcon, which is symbolically shutting Kylo out. Like, you see him seeing her and it's the last time. She shuts him out and declares her own identity at that point.
It'll be really interesting to see what her path is going to be in the next movie. I'm really interested to see what they do with her identity. And if, I mean, hopefully it's the same director. I don't know anything about the inside.
It's not, it's going to be JJ.
The first movie again.
It's going to be JJ Abrams.
Okay.
But I mean, I think what's nice about how they're doing these characters and making them more realistic and grayer is that I really don't have any concept of what they're going to be like in the third movie.
Yeah.
Like, I could see Kylo still redeeming himself, like, in the third movie, and kind of, he's in that kind of arc that people get into when they've been traumatized, where they go right to the worst case scenario, but then they can kind of pull themselves out of it and evolve. Or maybe he'll just go full-blown into it and be real Darth Vader and, like, go get another helmet.
Yeah.
Because I could see him doing either.
Yeah.
And I would believe either.
Yeah.
I'd be sadder, though, if he was really bad. I want him to just be good. And fall in love with her. I am. Rylo, goddamn.
Yep.
You really are.
So, final thoughts.
Hashtag Rylo.
Yeah.
Final thoughts. I really like this movie. I mean, obviously. I think it was really... I really love when movies like this have real emotional depth and realistic demonstrations of how people are. And I love when they're put into these genres where... people, you don't usually see it, and more people are exposed to it that wouldn't necessarily watch, like, a hard-hitting drama that utilized these themes and stuff.
Right. I agree with you. I also really enjoyed it. I know a lot of people had their problems with it, and that's what sparked our conversation in it to even start this podcast, and then chose The Last Jedi as our first episode here. But, like, I really liked it. I liked it more each time I saw it. I was a little disappointed by some of the stuff in it. Leia's Mary Poppins moment where she did the Force through the space.
That's just dorky. It
was bad.
That.
It was bad.
But also, shouldn't they just have taken that moment?
They could have taken that moment. They really could have.
To where it needed to go. Anyway, I love this movie. I saw it 3 times. I would see it 100 more times. I'm definitely going to watch it a bunch more. I really like the energy behind all of the characters. Mm-hmm. I really want to hug Kylo Ren, and I really want to help Rey find out who she really is.
They're also good actors. They're also good actors at playing the conflict. Like, the person who played Kylo Ren could easily just make him, like, a super douche asshole that you didn't give a shit about.
Yeah.
And he did a really good job of looking conflicted all the time. Like, as a therapist who's worked with a lot of really conflicted kids or kids who think that they're bad kids or their parents have decided that they're bad kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can see in their eyes, like, their struggle. It's deep in there and maybe they don't know how to get to it. And he did a really good job of having that look.
Having that look that a teenager has that you just want to be like, oh.
He is very teenager-y.
You're going to get there. And also, I love Adam Driver.
When he got... Yeah, Adam Driver's moment where he... where Rey calls him a monster. And he goes, yes. Yes, I am. And then they show that quick look down that he did. That was expert acting right there, allowing you to see that, like, even he doesn't fully believe it, but that's what he wants.
Or when she calls him Ben, and that, like, fucks him up hard in that elevator.
Yeah.
He's really good at showing that there is a big part of Kylo Ren that wants to be Ben, but doesn't think he can be.
Yeah.
Or is scared of trying to
be. He does
a
really good job of being conflicted and showing it all over his face.
And being tender even when he's being horrible. Like, when the fact that he says please to her when he wants her to go with him.
Right.
I don't think I would ever see in another movie like this.
No.
Like, a villain being vulnerable like that. Because there is that idea in like, more fantasy movies, sci-fi movies, of being the big bad and the big good.
Yeah.
And this movie did a good job of having him be emotional and vulnerable and conflicted, and her being the same.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw her flirt with that with the darkness, and then she, like, turned back. She's good. She's a great actress, but then her intensity that she can turn on is also so good and so well done. Like, when she's in that throne room fight and she lets loose that just, like, roar. Like, you don't see things like that from women typically in movies, like, ever.
Or that she's allowed to be so emotional.
Right.
And still be a strong character.
And still be respected.
How much she cries in those movies and it isn't thrown in her face is great.
Yeah. I think it's
lovely.
Great.
This movie's good.
The movie's so good.
It was good. It was good. I loved it. I recommend it. I like it. It shows heart. It shows psychological intelligence. It shows emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
Rian Johnson achieved what he set out to do, which was not only to turn some of the Star Wars things on their head and open them up to explore them, but it was also that he told you at the start that this isn't going to go the way you think.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be something where I am writing this. What is the most difficult thing I can have each character face? And I feel like not only did he have them face it, but he opened up story arcs and directions for this story to go that isn't repeating the same tropes over and over again. And my final thoughts on it, I loved it. I love it. I don't care what anybody says. I love it.
Same. Yeah. Same. So, I think that's that. So, you can follow us on Instagram at Popcorn Psychology. We also have a Gmail, popcornpsychology@gmail.com. If there's any questions you have for us, anything you want, like, elaborated on, anything you want to call us out on that you think we did not hit accurately, we welcome all feedback.
Yeah, we look forward to it, and we'll be releasing new episodes very soon, and we look forward to hearing your feedback and look forward to continuing our discussions on movies, as we all love movies quite a bit. We love movies. We love what we do. We love helping share the perspectives that we've learned as therapists to help bring life to some of the characters and some of the movies that we see, and explanations to some of the things that may seem out of character for people that are just really accurate or inaccurate portrayals of what psychological and mental health issues really look like and how you can recover from them.
Yeah. We hope you enjoyed it.
Bye.